Welcome to Sabbatical 101. My name is Bethany Walensky, and I'm an associate professor at Michigan State University. I had a life-changing sabbatical, and I'm on a mission to help fellow academics do the same. This podcast is a resource for all things academic sabbaticals. Each episode will provide you with inspiration and insight into the sabbatical planning process, regardless of your institution, discipline, length of sabbatical, or where you plan to sabbatical. I'm so excited to have you along for the ride. I'm really excited about this episode of the podcast because it's an interview with one of my colleagues from MSU, Annalisa Halverson. Annalisa is a full professor and has had two sabbaticals now, one where she relocated her family within the state of Michigan and one where they stayed in Detroit. I think you're really going to enjoy hearing her talk about how she planned these two very different sabbaticals and what she got out of them. All right. So hi, Annalisa. I'm so excited to talk to you about your sabbaticals. I remember when I started at MSU, yours was one of the first sabbatical reports I actually heard. So before we hear more about your sabbaticals, could you just say a little bit more about yourself, about your role and your research and stuff?
Absolutely. And thanks for having me, Bethany. I'm excited to talk with you as well. So I am a professor in the Department of Teacher Education at Michigan State University, and I teach a lot of courses in social studies methods, literacy methods, quantitative methods, foundational courses, and my research focuses on mostly elementary social studies education, curriculum design, curriculum reform, looking at ways to make curriculum more innovative, exciting, justice-oriented, appealing to young children. I've also worked at the secondary level as well, teaching discussion, historical inquiry, but all within the realm of social studies education.
Great. And you have three kids and a partner, right? Can you just say a little bit more about your family?
Sure. I love talking about my family. my husband, Bill, and he is an engineer. He owns his own company, and his work is quite flexible, which will come into play later when we talk about sabbaticals. but he's based in Detroit. And my three children, their ages now are 15, 13, and 11, all boys. I'll have two high schoolers this year and a middle schooler.
Okay. And so you've had 2-year-long sabbaticals now, one that was away but in the same state and one that was at home. So I'd love to hear more about each sabbatical and how you decided what you were doing for that sabbatical.
Yeah, great question. And you're right. The two sabbaticals have been quite different. The first was in 2015 to 2016, and I had just been promoted to associate professor. So I had received tenure at that point. And my children were quite young then. I had a first grader, a kindergartner, and then a preschooler. And so with that sabbatical, I felt, having gotten tenure, I was curious about exploring different kinds of research that were outside the norms of typically what you would try to get tenure. And so one of those was a teacher grant, a $250,000 grant from the Michigan Department of Education. To do professional development with teachers on historical inquiry. It turns out we did actually do quite a bit of research on that project, my team and I, and published from it. But the grant itself was very much the motivation was actually just to work directly with teachers. And that's one thing I felt like in this, the intensity to get tenure, I didn't get to spend as much time working with teachers, as I really love doing. So with that sabbatical, I had to find a area or a city or, a community in Michigan that qualified for one of these grants. And it turned out because of test scores and SES level and as a variety of other criteria. And it turned out that one of those on the list was Frankfort, Michigan, where I had spent quite a bit of time with my family because we would go up north to a place called Crystal Mountain, and Frankfort's close by. So I thought, oh, this is kind of interesting that this small town is on this list. And so then I ended up talking to the principal of the school there, who also happened to be the superintendent. It was a very tiny district. And he was really excited about the project. And I met a historian there. And so everything kind of fell into place because we ended up getting the grant. And I was able to have my two older children go to public school up there, the last deciding piece, I remember it was like May before we moved, was making sure I could get childcare for my youngest. And we were able to get him into a childcare spot there. And then my husband, we all moved up there. And then my husband would travel back to Detroit like maybe once a month or so for meetings and testing equipment as part of his job. So we kept our house here in Detroit. You know, I'd rather than Airbnb it. And then just, you know, we would come back occasionally, but mostly we were living up north. So that was the first one. And then the second one was after I got promoted to full professor. And so at that timing, for me, that was really important. Like, it was like a nice, like, I felt like there's so much pressure, you know, to, you know, achieve these milestones. And so the sabbatical in some ways is like a reward, you know, for each. And so the second one, my children were much too old to move and relocate, at least for our family. Like, and I know, I think it's great when some families are actually do at that, but with three kids entrenched in their schools and entrenched in their soccer programs, their friends, it just was going to be too much to try to relocate. We did toy with the idea of maybe moving to Spain where they can play soccer even more than they do already, but we ended up just staying in Detroit. And so, and then with this project, it's very much more individual than the first one. The first one was much, I had a huge team and, you know, historians and graduate students and other people in TE and teachers and everything. And this project was much more just on my own direct. And it was, I'm actually investigating how young children think about what are called cultural universals, things like families, government, racism, environmentalism, and so forth. So that has involved one-on-one interviews with children, and that's been a lot more flexible and easy to do. Not easy, but you know, it's just easier to schedule than the big grant that I had when we were living up north.
Okay, great. Well, it's so helpful to think about those two different kinds of sabbaticals and just thinking about like the ages of your kids being so different, because I'm sure that changed the, you know, how you thought about them, how you thought about the sabbatical and then also, and what was possible. And then I'm guessing it also shaped what the sabbatical felt like for you too, kind of being at home versus being away and having older kids versus younger kids.
That's right.
Yeah. So could you say more about that? Like how you, maybe how your kids responded to your sabbatical away and the, you know, planning the logistics and all that, how that went for you?
Yeah, I'd love to. And, you know, Bethany, I should have mentioned at the outset, like what a privilege it has been, not just to have one sabbatical, but two, this is not something I ever take for granted. And I'm so grateful to my colleagues who took over for things, you know, when I stepped away from my, you know, my regular duties as a professor, you know. So this is, and both of them I spent a lot of time planning for. I could have spent even more time, but the planning part, we'll probably talk about this later, but that's really, really important to be thinking ahead. But my children, they love the, you know, we live in the city of Detroit. Lived here since they were born. And so for them to be able to move from the biggest city in the state to, you know, almost one of the smallest was really exciting. I mean, when we moved back to Detroit, they had forgotten what stoplights were. They didn't know what pigeons were. how rotating doors were. I mean, it's just funny all the things they sort of forgot about not living in a city. And it was a big thing they had to deal with. My children are white, and where we lived up north was, you know, overwhelmingly white, and their schools in Detroit are not. And so that was another big adjustment, actually, I have to say, is the racial composition, you know, and just, you know, navigating all that. But they love the small town life. They could ride their bikes around. They made a lot of friends easily. And when we needed to, we would go to, you know, Traverse City if we needed sort of a bigger city. So I have to say that it was 2015, 2016. So I think the country's really changed quite a bit after the election of Trump. And so we were there before that. And so, you know, the politics were definitely different from Detroit, but it wasn't in an alarming way. Now, I don't think I could have probably moved my kids there now, just because, you know, they're more politically active and everything, and and they'd prefer to be around children with much more diversity. They're more aware of that than they were when they were younger. So, and then for the one here, my second one, my oldest was starting high school, And he goes to Cass Tech right down the street from our home. And it was great being on sabbatical. We would ride bikes to school together. I could actually go and see him play in his high school soccer games and swim meets and baseball games, because now he plays three sports. And so just, yeah, I mean, parent-teacher conferences at Cass Tech take about 3 hours because you just go to the gym and stand in line and wait for the teacher. So I'm not sure what I'm going to do next year, how I'm going to fit that into my schedule. But, you know, just to have more flexibility with that and to support him. I mean, as kids get older, high school kids, they really do need you to be around, you know, mm-hmm. and to not just take them places, but, you know, to check in on, you know, to see adjustment, because they went to a really small K-8 school called the Bog School, which is like wonderful and small and very nurturing to a high school that has 2,500 kids. So that was a big adjustment. Yeah. So that wasn't planned sort of at that sabbatical, like the timing. But I'm going to say it was very fortunate, because I was able to be around more and to be more supportive and to learn the process of even just how high school works. And then the other two, I think my middle at that time, last year, Toby was an eighth grader and he was applying to high school. So it was good to have more time to support him with that. Mm-hmm. And then Axel, my youngest, I would say, you know, probably it wasn't that much different, you know, than when I was teaching. When I'm not on sabbatical, although I didn't have, I commute. And so being around more, I think, was helpful to him, sure. Mm-hmm.
Great. Yeah, thanks. So you spoke about the work-related, the projects that you worked on during your sabbaticals. Did you have any personal goals during your sabbaticals, and what were those, and how did that work out for you?
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, I do really think it's important for sabbaticals, you know, to have goals. One thing I would recommend, though, is having reachable goals. Like, I think sometimes we think, oh, I'm going to do all this amazing stuff during my year. And, you know, you have to have sort of manageable goals, because you want to feel like you've worked towards them. And so realistic goals, I'd say. So, yeah, during my first sabbatical, it was really just to carry out this grant to deliver 103.5 hours of professional development to teachers, to recruit a great group of teachers to work with, to have it assemble a great team to work with. I had some other side projects during that time, but the main one really was, you know, working with local teachers in rural areas to be able to conduct historical inquiry using the local community. And, you know, from that, I was able to get a couple of publications, several presentations, you know, and then just bridge this relationship between teacher education and history with the historian. So that was really wonderful. And then in this sabbatical, like I said, my project is looking at, you know, young children's understanding of these cultural universals, and to build on the really wonderful research that Jan Allman and Jerry Brophy did in the 90s, but expand it in different ways. And yeah, I mean, I've been able to conduct, you know, 50 interviews with kids. You know, that's over 50 hours of, you know, of talking to them, learning from mm-hmm. them. I mean, I have a really diverse group of children. And then I'm currently conducting data analysis on those. So, I mean, one of the goals was to get a grant out based on this small project. I haven't done that yet, so that might be a little bit delayed, but that's one of those things where it's like, I know I want to do it, I just haven't gotten there quite yet. And I'm not going to beat myself up about it, because I, you know, I want to do a good job on it, and I need more time to do data collection or data analysis. So, right. But yeah, I think the other goals are just to improve my teaching. Like, you know, again, it's a privilege to have a year away from the university and service and everything, but like what I want, you know, one goal is to be a different kind of teacher, to be a better instructor when I come back, you know. So much of this year, for example, was spent like talking with families, spending more time in my kids' schools, and doing things that I think help me be a better social studies methods instructor. And I think, you know, I think once I start teaching again in the fall, I'll be able to see, you know, some of the benefits of this year away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So one thing I'm curious about is, it sounds like when you had your sabbatical, your first sabbatical in Frankfurt, that mm-hmm. was a big project. And I'm guessing mm-hmm. your time was very much structured by the project. Mm-hmm. But your sabbatical, your second sabbatical, you mm-hmm. were working by yourself on a project, or it was a little bit, maybe had a different flow to it. So I'm curious mm-hmm. how you went about sort of structuring your days, your daily or weekly rhythms? Because I think something that can be challenging about a sabbatical is when you pull away all of the things we're accountable to, it can feel like endless time, but then also hard to figure out like how to be productive, or if I want to go for a run every day, where do I fit that in so I make sure it happens? So could you talk a little bit about, you know, if you had a strategy or a way you thought about structuring your time?
Gosh, that's a great question and probably something I need to learn from others. So I have to come back to the podcast and listen to other people do this. I mean, yeah, it's, I've done different things before, and this is sometimes I've color coded my calendar. One time I was in during my first sabbatical, I was worried I wasn't spending enough time with my children. But then when I did a log, actually, I think logs are very, very helpful. I haven't done one this sabbatical, but I do think when you keep a log of to track your time and then putting the time in different colors. So I remember my children were in yellow, and I looked, I took one glance at the calendar and saw how much yellow there was. And I said, okay, I'm going to stop worrying about spending enough time with my kids. I spend plenty of time with my kids.
You know? No more guilt.
Exactly. No more guilt. Yeah. 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 But this one, you know, I think what's been nice is I do still have several other projects, ongoing, you know, collaborations. And I have a lot of students I'm still working with. And so every day I definitely still have meetings with students or meeting with another research project. But trying to space those out, I ended up scheduling things a little bit further in advance in my sabbaticals so that I can ensure that there are large blocks of time, especially when I was conducting interviews. I needed hours and hours to do that, but then to have that time to do analysis as well. So I definitely think, you know, just trying to not overschedule yourself, to leave large blocks of uninterrupted time where you can really dig in, because sabbatical time should really be thinking about investing like good amounts of time playing with ideas and thinking, and sort of like going back to your dissertation time, you know, where you just had, you know, just that was your focus, you know? And so I think, you know, just being mindful, you know, don't try to schedule yourself back to back all day long in Zoom meetings, you know, trying to find that time. And I do think, I'll just say a plug for running and walking. Sometimes that's where your best ideas come. You shut down the computer, you go for a walk, and you just start like talking or thinking out loud about your work. And that's where some of the exciting ideas can come. So.
Yeah, for sure. So you mentioned working with students while you're on sabbatical, and I know it can be challenging to have, most of us have students who are at different phases in the program and need different kinds of support. So could you say a little bit about how you, just how you think about that and the ways that you do or don't support students while you're on sabbatical?
And this is where it comes to planning. Sometimes that can be helpful. I mean, if you're somebody who has lots and lots of students, that can be hard to do. But, you know, it's hard to go step away working with a student when they're close to finishing or when they're going through these program milestones like comprehensive examinations and practicum and so forth. So for me, the timing, I have students at all different levels or different, you know, years in the program. So it would have been really impossible to figure out an ideal time to leave. I didn't actually have anybody actively writing their dissertation on the sabbatical, and that I think really helped, because the year before I had a student or two students. So that is helpful. I have two advisees who were first year students, and it was wonderful because I was able to work with other faculty to, you know, co-advise those students during the year. So that was really helpful. And then I had my sort of students in the mid years of the programs, and we would still continue to meet regularly, and I would support them on their comprehensive exams and practicum and other program milestones. And then some who are closer to finishing, and that would involve, you know, dissertation proposals and so forth. So, I mean, I think people are going to do it different ways. I think if you can have students like rely maybe more on their committee, on other members of their committee to do a co-advising approach, or, you know, if you do end up having a lull in, you know, advising, like maybe that might be a time to think about going on sabbatical too. But I know there's lots of different ways that people do it. And I've been really fortunate to be able to collaborate with faculty to help co-support the students that I do work with.
Okay, great. Thanks. So as you look back on both of your sabbaticals, What do you think went really well for each of them? Like what would you say were the highlights for you, either, you know, personally or professionally or both?
Mm-hmm. Great question. The first one, it was, just living in a small town and just the kind of slowness of life, I had a different friend group. I made a lot of friends up there. Everything being so walkable. I mean, living on a lake. I mean, everything was, it was just a really beautiful space to be in. And seeing my kids thrive, seeing my kids in an elementary school that really does work well. I mean, yes, it wasn't diverse racially, but it was, high poverty rate and medium to high poverty rate. And, you know, seeing that this school is just, you know, it reminded me of Horace Mann's The Great Equalizer. You know, I mean, it was like, wow, you know, every kid was given so much attention, and to see a public school that really, really worked effectively. Mm-hmm. It was run well, teachers were fantastic. You know, that was really exciting. It was very much a real sort of affirmation of, you know, how great public education is in this country. So that was a real highlight of that year. It was sad to leave, but it was really great to have that experience. And this one, I'd say, I'm getting to talk to these kids about their ideas. I mean, yeah. It's just what a privilege to get to talk to these young children about their really interesting ideas about the environment and discrimination, homelessness. You know, I mean, it's been fascinating. The research itself has been really, really rewarding. But I'd also say, you know, I have to say, because I commute and not have any dues of the commute.
Yeah.
I'll just be real practical. Like, you know, it's just been really nice to not have to put the many miles on my car or me by doing that commute. And so I'd say that's another one. Just more time with my family. Mm-hmm. I've been able to do some more cooking. I'm now learning to make pizzas in a pizza oven.
Ooh.
Yes, I'm battling with the crust, but I'm still working on that. And even just little things like gardening, biking, you know, just doing things that I normally would never take time to do. Mm-hmm. Playing a lot of board games with my kids, just, you know, consciously spending more time on things that I usually am in a rush, you know, and I, mm-hmm. you know, don't have that much time to do. So just taking things a little slower has been really, really lovely.
Yeah, that's great. I feel like that was one of my goals for my sabbatical, just being more present and more in the moment, because I feel like usually we're just running around from one thing to the next. And that's one of the privileges of sabbatical, right? Like,
just I love that.
The yeah, spacious present. And like, mm-hmm. yeah.
That's so true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you were to take another sabbatical in the future, which might feel like too much to think about right now, is there anything you think you would do differently than what you've already done on your sabbaticals?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I'm probably not going to I don't know. I just feel like I've been so lucky, you know, that I don't anticipate probably taking another one. If I were, you know, it'd be in another 10 years or so. And by that time, my children will be out of the house and I hope moving on with their lives.
Yeah.
So at that point, then it might be really interesting to move somewhere different. This project, ultimately, I'd love for this project to be like a global project where I have developed this instrument that is then used in different countries, you know, and Singapore and Sweden, Brazil, and those different countries where we can get to a sense of how children grow to trust or not trust the government and what they think about environmentalism, how that's different across different countries. So, I mean, I have had ideas about that. So I think, I think that the next one, if I were to take one, would be living somewhere different because my family situation, you know, would allow that. I guess I'd have to see too, you know, if I'm, what other projects I'm working on. One thing I hadn't mentioned before, but like as the planning, it is really helpful if you can get extra funding, because my sabbaticals were both full year. And again, I was really privileged to be able to take half salary to do that. But I also had grants from other projects that helped, because when you do a grant during sabbatical, the percent effort you have, you know, it goes directly to your salary. So during both sabbaticals, I had percent effort on a couple grants, which it didn't bring me to 100%, mm-hmm. but it brought me closer to 100%. And so that allowed me, you know, it just made things a little bit easier budgeting wise to be able to not take that much of a hit, you know, with the salary. So that would be another thing I would think about, like I'd be mindful of. And that's something I would want listeners to be thinking about. Like if you, you know, if taking a full one is so wonderful rather than a half. And so if you can, you know, do that by augmenting your half salary. And again, I guess institutions are different, but at least at Michigan State, that's how we do it. And so if people taking sabbatical are able to augment their salary with a grant, that, you know, helps a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And, yeah, it's such a privilege to be able to take a full year. And I think a lot of people are, especially with the first sabbatical, in more of a place where a semester is the only is what's possible. But, and I think that can still be great, but I think you're right that like planning ahead to think about the logistics of all of it, is really important.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. 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 And you, I mean, and if, when you think about a half year, I think about it as starting May 16th, at least at MSU. Yeah. We're off contract May 15th. So if you have a half year and you do it in the fall, May 16th, all the way to whenever classes start in January, you know, and so that it's not just a semester, it's really adding on that summer, you know.
Yeah.
So with my sabbatical, I've considered it two summers and an academic year, which is 15 months, which is quite a lovely chunk of time.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think I'm working with a client right now who's talking about really being intentional about using those semester, those summers that bookend the year-long sabbatical, and actually taking the summers entirely off, like saying, well, the school year is, the kids are in school, and so that's when the work can get done. And so, you know, if you include summers, you can think more expansively or in different ways potentially about a year or a semester long sabbatical.
That's great. No, that's really exciting. I'm so glad they're thinking about that. I hadn't thought about it that way, you know.
Yeah, I did not think about it that way either for mine. I think the summer before was just like, get everything done and like get everything in order so I could feel
that's
like
right.
I could be away. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what advice would you give someone planning a sabbatical? I mean, I know that you've given a lot of advice throughout the conversation, but anything that you feel like, oh, here's something that people really need to know or be thinking about?
Mm-hmm. That's great. Great question. Gosh, well, yeah, like I said, I think thinking about buckets, you know, like what would be good if you have a, you know, children or partner or parents or, you know, the people in your life, how is it going to affect them? And so that's one sort of bucket of things. And talk about it with them too. I mean, I think at this, my first sabbatical, I didn't talk to my children much. I was more like, this is what we're doing. But
they
the second
were still
one,
pretty young.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right. They're like, oh, an adventure. We're moving, moving away. But this one, you know, I think we involving them in the conversation, it you know, because it was a family decision, certainly, like, you know, there's going to be less money and, you know, I'm going to be around more, which, you know, as a children get older, you know, I was saying,
for better or worse.
Yeah. So, and then especially with my partner too, you know, those discussions. And then another bucket would be the finances, you know, thinking about, you know, even if you don't, if your line of, you know, career, your area isn't one where there's a lot of grants. Mine is actually not a lot of grants, but I was able to partner with people who are in areas that do have grants. But maybe you could do some, you know, if you're thinking about augmenting your salary, like, you know, consulting or, you know, doing, you know, some reviewing. I mean, you don't want to do too much that takes away from your sabbatical work, but it might be that you're able to do, you know, a little bit of work that it enables you to take that full year sabbatical if that's what you want to do. So that's finances would be another one. I think sounds silly, but kind of like space, like where are you going to be? Where are you going to work? Like, are you going to stay, you know, work in your home? You know, you want to stay away from the office, that's for sure, because you'll get sucked. I go to campus once.
Yeah.
During the sabbatical. The first one I did, I had to for a couple of meetings, but this one I did not. I don't know what's happening in my office. I hope there's not like a plant dying in it, you know, but.
Yeah, or some sort of an infestation or something.
Exactly. Like, did I take out my garbage? So space, you know, and where are you going to work? And you might be multiple places that you might end up working. And are there distractions? You know, if you're at home, you know, are there going to be distractions? So that might be another one. And I think to your point earlier about rhythm of the day, when are you going to work? You know, I've been trying actively to take time off to work less in the evenings, because that is when my children are home. And usually I work most evenings. And so during sabbatical, I've been better about like weekends and weekday evenings and just, you know, sort of thinking about the rhythm of my day and how do I pack more in, like what your client was saying when their kids are in school, you know, that's an optimal time to work, but then, you know, being, you know, ready for them, you know, in the late afternoon, evening and so forth. So I think about rhythm. Yeah. And then I think the last thing is just, you know, the goals that, you know, and talking to other people about your goals. I think that helps you sort of keep accountable. And like everyone I've talked about this project and the other one too, like people are genuinely interested. It's so lovely, you know? So the more you talk about it, like the more people say, yeah, how's that project going? How's data collection going? And that will also help, you know, sort of keep you accountable. So that's kind of another area I think about is just, you know, setting goals and then, you know, broad goals, not real explicit goals, I think, you know, and generally what do you hope to do? And then sharing those with others who can help, you know, keep you on track.
Yeah. Cause I think it's also easy to get isolated during your sabbaticals. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going in. And I totally agree. I think some people maybe work better. They have like reasons to go into the office, but no, for me, I feel like that physical separation is so important. But then you also don't want to be like, I don't want it to be just me in my basement by myself.
That's
thinking
right.
My own thoughts, right? You still need your people and your community and your accountability partners and stuff.
That's like right. That. That's right. Yeah. That's a really good point. Yeah. And I think like for me, like students that I work with, that's been a real lifeline. And then I have colleagues that I've been working with on projects and then friends, you know, like staying, you know, just because I'm not on sabbatical. Sometimes people have been reluctant to like text me about something like, I don't want to bother you. And well, I'm like, well, we're still friends. Like you can always reach out as a friend. And so, that's been another way to keep connected. Yeah. And I think that helps with, I guess the other thing I should say is the advice question is about the reentry, you know, and I'm getting ready to do that. And, I think staying somewhat connected, like through students and with my colleagues who are my friends that I'm working with, like that's going to help me when I go back. So sort of know what's been going on in the department. You know, what are new initiatives? What are, you know, how's our program redesign going? Because that's what we've been working on. So that doesn't come as a real shock, you know, when I come back. So I think, yeah, another one is just, you know, keeping an arm's length distance, of course, but then not being totally disconnected so that, you know, when you come back, everything's a shock.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to stay engaged just enough so that you, you know, you're going back. And so, yeah, kind of find a good balance between disengaging and being like totally out of the loop.
So. That's right, Bethany. Good balance. That's a good way of putting it. Mm-hmm.
Well, Annalisa, it was so fun to hear about your sabbaticals. And I'm so excited for you that you had these two. I just love thinking about, you know, how different they were and how meaningful each sabbatical was in its own right and helped you accomplish different goals professionally and created different kinds of opportunities for you and your family. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you wanted to share about your sabbaticals before we go?
Thanks for asking. I don't think anything more about my sabbaticals, but I will just say to you that I think it's really exciting to be supporting people thinking about taking sabbaticals or taking sabbaticals. And I just wish all of your listeners just really fulfilling, joyful, meaningful, relaxing sabbaticals, you know, coming up. And I hope they can make the most of them and, you know, come back feeling refreshed and reinvigorated, you know, and really, really just enjoy that time.
All right. Thank you so much, Annalisa. This was great.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Bethany.
I hope you found this episode of Sabbatical 101 helpful and inspirational as you think about your own sabbatical. If you want to read more about sabbaticals or get even more support for planning your own life-changing sabbatical, head over to my website, www.bethanywalinsky.com, to read my blog and for more information about my sabbatical coaching program.